This is Bedside, a podcast series on a mission to debunk sex. I'm your host, Tatiana, and each week we uncover stories, ideas, and expert information to help guide you on your ever-evolving journey of deep love, relationships, and good sex. Oh, and a little bit of manifestation sprinkled in there too. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Bedside Podcast. I'm your host, Tatiana, at the bedside, all fun spots on social, and happy Wednesday. My gosh, I love Wednesdays. So excited to be here with you guys today, and mostly because I have got my favorite sex therapist back on the show, Dr. Kate Balistrieri. Dr. Kate and I have so much fun recording together. We do a lot of like swap episodes. I've had her on the show a couple times. I've been on her show. I'll link our most recent episode in the show notes. It is just such a blast to get to connect with her. But most importantly, today we are talking about a topic that I feel like has been touched upon, but has not really had a lot of airtime. And so I'm very excited to have her on the show today to talk all about self-worth and sexual shame when it comes to our intimacy. I know many of us were brought up in kind of households or education systems that skirted around sex, intimacy, whether or not you got like puritanical messaging, right? There's like so much loaded when it comes to the way that we learn about sex, the way that it has been programmed into how we live, breathe, exist in this world. And so today we are debunking and really kind of getting to the root all about things that have to do with sexual shame. Like, what are the signs that you might be dealing with sexual shame? What are things that you can look out for when it comes to your self-worth in your sexual expression in the bedroom? How do you begin to actually flip these shame narratives? I feel like that has been left out of so much dialogue, right? We talk about sexual shame, but we're like, okay, now what? Now what do I do with it? And so today we are really distilling down all of these very tactical tools and tips that we can exercise to bring awareness to what it might be for us if we have sexual shame, what those things might look like, and how we can actually transform them. Because guys, we are never stuck in one fixed situation. We always have options. We are always able to grow and evolve out of ways of thinking and really give ourselves freedom. That's kind of what I'm getting at. Freedom from much of the messaging that we get around sexuality and intimacy and the way that we should, quote unquote, be expressing ourselves and what is right and what is wrong, etc. I'm saying that in air quotes. So anyways, I'm really excited to have Dr. Kate here on the show today to get nitty gritty with us. She's one of my favorites, and I can't wait for you guys to tune into this week's episode. All right, without further ado, please welcome Dr. Kate Balistrieri back to the Bedside Podcast. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Bedside Podcast. I'm so excited to have you here tuned in and listening. Happy Wednesday. And guys, I am live with one of my fave sex therapists. I have Dr. Kate Balistrieri here. I love recording with you. We've done this a few times now. So
we have. It's always such a blast. And thank you for having me back on your show.
Yes, of course. Yeah. So I feel like today I mainly am really eager to tap you on a topic that I think people talk a lot about, but on a surface level, and then we don't go much deeper than maybe mentioning it, which is sexual shame and shame around intimacy. And I was really thinking about this as I was kind of knowing and gearing up to chat with you, because I was like, yeah, you know, a lot of our sex ed systems have taught kind of this either overt shame or kind of underlying shame in the education. And a lot of people walk away with that into their adult lives, into their adult relationships. But I think a lot of the time there can be this like knowingness that people carry around it, but then this very underlying unknowingness that they're walking around with sexual shame. And it takes a while to really realize it. And so what I'm most excited to chat with you about today is getting to that layer deeper of like, okay, well, let's go there. What is sexual shame?
I mean, it's such an important question. And I love the way you set that up, because there's the shame that we're conscious of, and then there's the shame we're not conscious of. And that unconscious shame really guides a lot of what we do or don't do sexually. Mm-hmm. So it's super important to try to understand as much as we can about what shame we're holding on to, where it came from, and how to get rid of it.
Yeah, which is so important. And I think a lot of people's sex education, I have a lot of people write in who are like, I went to Catholic school. It was loaded with shame.
Yeah.
What are scenarios that people might kind of be in where shame is guised or it's a little bit more in the subconscious? Mm-hmm. What might that look like in our everyday?
Yeah, great question. So first, you know, whether or not you grew up in an environment that was very loud in its purity culture factor, pretty much everyone in this country has absorbed some element of purity culture, because it's a part and parcel to the patriarchal system that dominates Western culture. So even if you're not a religious person or you didn't go to religious schools, you might have been, you know, inherited, and I'm going to use that word because this shame is passed down generationally. It's not something that we're born with, but it's passed down generationally in the sense that people talk a lot about sex or they don't talk about sex at all. Mm. But what they say about it or don't say about it conveys a lot of meaning in terms of how comfortable we feel with sexuality in general, let alone our own. So there's that sort of hot mess that we can untangle in a second. But the other thing that I think is really important to remember around shame is that we grade ourselves a lot in terms of our relationship with sex. How was my performance? Did my partner have a good time? Did I have an orgasm? Have I slept with enough people? Have I slept with too many people? Right? There's just all of this like grading that is so nonsensical, but we're taught to do that.
Yeah.
Because of, again, the ways that society has conflated sexuality and sexual behavior with worth, worthiness, power, and meaning in our lives. Like it's been so over-attached to romance and the idea of marriage. So when people are having sex that either looks like that or doesn't, depending on what script they've been given in life and what script they read and what script they like, they could be really giving themselves a poor grade constantly, and they may or may not be aware of it. And then there are things like body image and how we feel about our appearance and how we feel about the way we look during sex, or the way we sound or the way we smell. You know, we can get taken out of the moment really quickly and become a spectator of the experience instead of a participant in the experience. And so those are some of the more subtle ways that I would say a sexual shame creeps in and really interrupts our pleasure. But it can sometimes look like avoiding being sexual or avoiding a person that you want to be sexual with. A lot of partners will have changes in their bodies, for example, or they'll feel really stressed and tired and they don't feel good about how they look anymore or in that moment. And so they might start avoiding sex with their partner. They don't initiate anymore. And that could be related to body shame, but it also, our sex lives suffer, you know, because of that shame. So it can become a sexual shame, because then we don't necessarily feel like we have that part of our life like on tap.
Yeah.
Is that the right phrase?
Yeah. Yeah, totally. And it's so interesting. I've never heard someone paint the picture of us grading ourselves after our sexual performances, mm-hmm. but it's so true, right? Because it's like, we're like, did we achieve?
Yeah.
Did we achieve the orgasm? Did the partner achieve the orgasm? Did we, whatever your criteria is? Mm-hmm. And I think that's such an interesting concept that I've actually never even taken into consideration mm-hmm. myself around, you know, yes, I've understood that we've put pleasure into like achievement orientation, mm-hmm. but the way that you then make that a representation of who you are is so mm-hmm. real.
It's so real, right? I mean, I work with so many penis owners, and they'll say things like, my penis didn't stay hard long enough. Well, how hard does it need to stay? Or how long does it need to stay hard for you to feel like you're a good human, mm-hmm. right? And I don't mean to dismiss people's concerns about not having an erection, but I think we prematurely go to this place of, I'm no good mm-hmm. if the sexual experience that we're having doesn't meet the standard in our mind about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think what's interesting too is we hold a lot of our standards so high mm-hmm. around sex and intimacy mm-hmm. as being these like euphoric, heightened experiences at all time. Mm-hmm. Like they have to be the best of the best. Yes. And that, even if you're someone who's kind of leaning toward perfectionistic tendencies, even you can find yourself probably in a similar scenario of mm-hmm. just kind of holding yourself up to expectations that are just so hard to achieve.
Totally. Especially when we look at the ways, again, that we've overcoupled sex with other parts of our identities. So if sex is a landscape in which you feel you have to follow certain steps and you're doing something different, like that can affect your self-esteem in other parts of your life. It can affect your sense of self. It can affect your relationships with friends, family, other folks, other, you know, in the community, because we really, you know, judge ourselves so harshly. You know, for example, I work with a lot of women who really want a robust sex life, and they should have it, in my opinion. But they feel like if they do that, then they're not going to be the kind of woman, and I'm putting that in quotes, who is a good woman, mm-hmm. right? So here's another way where sexual shame creeps in. It's like sometimes the things that we want, we're told we shouldn't want or shouldn't like, or we're told that we shouldn't advocate for certain things. And that becomes a way then that we shut down in ourselves, right? It's limiting. And that limitation can carry over into other parts of our existence. Mm.
So how do we begin to not maybe like meaning make as much around mm-hmm. our sexual like expressions? Or is that not really the answer? Is it maybe more an idea of not meaning making, but allowing ourselves to have meaning, but also not hold it so tightly, maybe?
Yeah. Well, I think there's a lot of deconstructing that mm-hmm. that happens when we start asking those questions. And I love those questions, right? Like, what is sex really? What is it? It's an activity. It's literally something we do. It's like golfing or knitting or, I don't know, playing paintball, like whatever. It's just an activity. It's another activity that we do. It's a way that we play. It's a way that we feel good. It's like dancing, right? It's just something that we do. But we've like given it so much power mm-hmm. in our collective unconscious. Like, ooh, sex. It's this mysterious thing. It's this blah, blah, blah. It's just literally something that you do. So I think when we sort of take it off the pedestal as this like ridiculously powerful, like life-altering thing, it just becomes another activity. And when we right-size it like that and you sort of untangle all of these, I'll call them octopus arms, you know, of meaning that like make sex carry a lot more weight for some people in their minds, like it becomes a lot more liberating and you can just do it and then go back to your regular life. And it doesn't have to be something that changes how you feel about yourself. And what I mean by that is like, sure, sex can help boost your confidence. It can make you feel good, but it doesn't have to impact your self-worth, mm. right? That's really the piece that I think we can take, we can work hard to untangle. Like if you have sex one time or 1,000 times, it literally does not change your character. It doesn't make you a high value or a low value. And I hate that terminology, but it doesn't mean anything about you, right? It's just pleasure. It's just something we do.
Mm-hmm. That's so amazing and like relieving to hear too. The idea of like, can we take it and just, can we extract our self-worth from it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, can we just remove that?
Exactly. Just like these two things are not like dependent on each other.
Yeah.
Right. We can just have sex and enjoy it and have connection in it or not. We can, like, it doesn't have to mean that it's like this life altering transcendent moment. It can, mm-hmm. but it doesn't have to do anything. It doesn't have to change anything about like your place in the world.
Yeah. I love it. I'm reading this. It reminded me, I just started, so I'm like very early in, but I'm reading this book called Worthy by Jeannie Lima Kern. She, I might be butchering her last name, but she is the founder of IT Cosmetics and like was like a Denny's waitress and then like sold for like over $1 billion for like IT Cosmetics. And she has this really crazy story of, this will come full circle in a second, guys. She has this crazy story about how her whole life she loved Oprah and she's finally like in her house They have like a 4-hour long lunch. And Oprah's like, here's my phone number. Call me whenever. And she said that she sat for 4 years in like just petrified to reach out to Oprah because she was like, I'm unworthy of this. It was like this deep worthiness. Mm-hmm. And then so it kind of inspired this whole book. And what I've found really fascinating in reading is this really interesting distinction between self-worth and self-confidence. Mm. And she was like, listen, self-confidence can be the thing that gives you the quick hit, that fix. And she's like, but distinguish that from that meaning making of who you are to your core. Mm-hmm. And so that is kind of reminding me a bit of our sexual experiences. It's not to say don't have the so much fun, don't whatever, you know, attribute your joy and happiness to it, right? But I think it's like, can we extract or can we differentiate maybe this sexual experience? Yeah, maybe it can give me some self-confidence. Mm-hmm. Maybe I can exercise that, but right. What it's not doing is telling me who my entire being is.
Yes, yes, exactly. And your worthiness as a being, mm-hmm. right? Like one of the things that is kind of a core fear for a lot of folks, you know, we have a few kind of universal core fears. Am I lovable? Am I safe? And I think it kind of boils down to those two things. Everything else like fits into those two categories, in my opinion. Am I lovable and am I safe? And when we think about the ways that sexual shame can really corrupt our idea of am I lovable, mm-hmm. right? It also can corrupt our sense of safety if sex is something that has been shamed in us or weaponized against us. So it, you know, sex is a powerful thing in the sense that we've given it meaning, but when we take our worthiness back, again, we're just able to right size this experience and let it be something that gives us a platform for self-expression, but doesn't change that core belief about how lovable we actually are.
Mm-hmm. How do you suggest, and I know this is a broad stroke question because it's probably, you know, it's nuanced and it has its own prescription, if you will, per individual, but how do we begin to kind of flip some of these shame narratives? Like, where do we even start? If we're like, okay, yeah, I'm noticing that I have a sex report card that I...
I love that, a sex report card. Oh my gosh, I want to make that. And the only options are going to be A+.
Yeah.
Like, that's it. I love that.
Yeah. Like, you know, so if someone's listening and they're like, okay, yeah, I might... Either, yes, this has been clear to me in my entire life, or as upon listening to this, like there definitely is a little bit that I could sense I could untangle mm-hmm. for just, you know, for my freedom. Mm-hmm. So what are your thoughts around where we can begin to flip that?
Yeah, well, I'm a big nerd. And one of the things that
love a nerd.
I do, I love the nerds. One of the things that I think is super important is education, mm-hmm. right? Learning a lot about sex. Learning about how you learned about sex and the philosophies and ideologies about it that were communicated to you, where those ideas came from, I think is a really good start. Because when we start to look at, you know, these messages about sex that we've been given, it's really easy to start putting them down when we look at kind of the absurdities of how they were created and what the function was that they were designed to do, right? I mean, all of the prohibitions around sex that have been created and that I think a lot of people walk around with are literally functions of government control that have been passed down to us through religious script, because religions used to be one of the earliest forms of government, mm-hmm. right? So I'm not saying that it's bad to be religious, but I do think that it's important that we recognize how religion has been weaponized to keep us in some sort of control, right? It keeps us stuck. It keeps us, and when I say stuck, I mean it keeps us stuck to a narrative of how we should be. And those shoulds can be useful in some ways, but also really destructive mm-hmm. in a lot of ways. And so telling people that they are bad if they have any kind of sex except a specific kind was a way that early governments and religions worked together to keep some sort of power mm-hmm. structures happening in the world. So I think when you really start looking at the way that sex has been talked about historically and the evolution of sexual liberation and sexual prohibitions that has happened, having that information is super powerful. And when a lot of folks start to do that reading and that education or that talking to other people, like they'll start asking questions like, why do I actually care about this? Yeah. Wait a minute.
Yeah.
If that's not actually bad, would I be interested in doing that? Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. I didn't know I had so much pleasure in that part of my body. Like, I'm so excited that I'm giving myself permission to explore that right now and didn't think that it was off limits for the rest of my life. So, you know, we just have to start like trying new things, talking to other sex positive people, maybe limiting conversations with folks who are really rigid and narrow-minded about sex because they're still in their process, mm-hmm. and they may not be the best people for you to ask more curious and open-ended questions with. They can start doing like sexual empowerment journals and journaling and kind of think about like, what does it mean to be really sexually empowered for you? Mm-hmm. Have a friend group that you like do a book club around and read a book about sex and talk about it.
So fun. I'm like, I need that.
Yeah. But literally, like, we have been told not to talk about sex. So I say turn that on its head.
Yeah.
And do the education in a fun way with your friends and really, like, ask the hard questions of yourselves in a supportive, contained space.
I love that piece of advice because I think all of those tips are awesome, awesome places to begin. What really stood out to me, too, was this idea of, you know, who are you maybe surrounding yourself with that's turning you down? And this can even be someone who's like dimming your light, right? Like what is turning down that like radar in you that makes you feel like you need to monitor yourself or suppress yourself in any way? And it's so important who we surround ourselves with and reminding ourselves like we have a choice in this and we can continually seek environments that can support exploration, which I love. I love all of these tips here.
Well, you bring up something really important in sort of the subtext of what you're saying, and that is that we do need to feel safe enough to do that opening and exploratory work, right, within ourselves. So I love that. Like, take a look around in your community of folks, who's in your inner circle, and who is, like, dumping shame on you, because a lot of folks are really well-intentioned, but my God, do they just dump the shame out?
Yes.
And they are generous with it. So if that's happening, that might be someone to kind of take a little step back from, because that's not a safe context for you to start feeling good about yourself in general, but maybe not to even talk about sex with them or be curious about yourself sexually in their presence. So definitely think about what boundaries might you want to put in place to really feel like you have the safety that you need to start thinking more expansively about your own pleasure.
Yep, hands down. And I think too, just to like tack on to that, it's, you said boundaries, which I think is a great word to use in this context because it's not like you have to cut all people out of your life, right? Mm-hmm. But it's understanding, okay, you know, maybe there are certain things that this person isn't available for or mm-hmm. that like I don't feel good about talking about this specific topic, but they're still maybe a great friend in other categories.
Exactly.
You know, I've even had to find that in my own life with certain things about business or like mm-hmm. goals that I have, right? Like realizing, you know what, not everyone can accept this. And mm-hmm. and like, you know, sometimes people have a lot of fear around certain topics. So I mm-hmm. think it's really, really great to note that you don't have to change and overhaul your life. But
totally. And you also don't have to shame other people who aren't on this mm-hmm. journey, right? Not everyone wants to explore sexuality. It can feel really daunting and really scary for folks for myriad reasons. So someone's not a bad person or they're not, I like what you said, you don't have to cut them out of your life necessarily. But definitely think about, like, you've got friends that you hike with. Maybe you have friends that you talk about sex with. Maybe you have friends that you talk about your business goals with. Maybe you have friends that you share recipes with. It's okay to have dimensional community around you. In fact, that probably makes your community a really strong place for you holistically.
Yes. Love. Okay. So if somebody is curious to explore more around kind of their sexual practices, but they're feeling a little held back from shame, what do you suggest we begin to do? Because we've kind of talked about education. We've mm-hmm. talked about surrounding yourself with specific people and creating community around this conversation. But when it comes to actually exploring intimacy, I'm curious to know your thoughts there. And maybe I'll give you an example. I recently had a friend come to me and say, you know, it's really interesting. I feel as though I've maybe done more of the education around, and my girlfriends and I talk about sex and stuff. But she was like, when it comes to masturbation or solo play, it's still something that feels uncomfortable for me. And like, it's hard to drop in. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious for kind of maybe that scenario or that person, what are your tips or advice around that?
Yeah, I would say that the messaging that we've been given around sex when there's a lot of shame attached to it can be really, really strong. And even if consciously we've begun that cognitive deconstruction, there might still be some somatic tethers to shame. And when that happens, I think it's okay to just say, all right, here's my body reacting to something that is old news. And also, how can I take care of myself and nourish myself in this moment, right? Because the body going into that response is a protective mechanism. The body is saying, oh, something's not right here. Let me shut down all systems and try to keep, you know, everything kosher and okay. But it's reacting to this old story from there and then. So when that happens, I would say slow down. You know, give yourself something more incremental to work up to. Maybe start with one toy instead of six. Set aside 20 minutes for yourself instead of an hour if you're feeling like it's a scary, daunting, or worrisome task ahead. Bring with you things that provide you peace. So that could be maybe some essential oils, or if you like a heating pad or something when you get nervous or feel off in your body, bring some lotion or something that you can do non-sexually to kind of be back in your body and keep that practice of pleasure moving forward without it needing to be sexual. Like, it's okay to honor what's happening in your body. You do not need to bulldoze through and force yourself, right? That can, in fact, be really contraindicated and can create a reaction in the body that's even more protective. But I think just sort of honor where you are and keep the practice going incrementally, because the more you give yourself permission to be in your body and explore slowly with what does feel good, the more you feel compelled to go back and do what feels good. And that might include more sexual practices in the future, or you might land on something that feels really nice and stay with that.
Mm-hmm. I love that. And I like how you mentioned too, you know, noting that something might maybe be an old story. Mm-hmm. And I've even found that helpful kind of in my own growth processes and things that I've moved through, whether it's sexual or not sexual, being like, hold up, let me just bring a little awareness to this. Mm-hmm. This is an old fucking narrative.
Yes.
This is not who I am today and how I'm operating. And, you know, how can I honor compassionately that piece? And then also say, okay, I'm here too. Mm-hmm. So where are we going to maybe meet in the middle on this?
I love that. I love that.
Yeah. I also am curious to know, okay, so somebody outside of solo play, if we're feeling maybe shameful, and this might kind of tie a bit into like partner shame too, when it comes to wanting to explore certain things. Mm-hmm. I know that it can be intimidating to share maybe some of your, what turns you on and some of the things you want to explore, whether that might be shame internally or from someone else. How do we begin to navigate that maybe in partnership?
Yeah, well, it gets a little bit more complicated in partnership because we attach a lot of meaning and a lot of safety and a lot of fear to the idea of exploring new things, right? And very quickly, people can start to wonder, am I enough? Am I lovable? And am I safe? Is this relationship going to withstand this exploration? So I think sometimes the shame that we feel is a reaction to those bigger questions, and we don't know how to address those things. They're really vulnerable. They may even be so scary and so vulnerable that it's hard to know them or speak them. So if your partner's coming at you hot with a lot of shame or a lot of shutdown when you bring something up, I might get really curious about, is there a safety concern that they might be contending with, that if it's addressed, maybe this goes away and there is some opening? But to get that conversation started, one, I would say, pick a time when you're both in a good headspace. Like, don't have this conversation when you're bringing your kids to soccer, and don't have this conversation when you're in the bedroom. Don't have the conversation when you have a hot deadline. Like, create some time when you're relaxed and both of you are in an open headspace and agree that, like, hey, we're going to maybe talk about some more meaningful things tonight.
I love that word choice, any too, meaningful versus maybe hard or complicated. Yeah. Things. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Because it is all meaningful. Like, mm-hmm. the conversations build your relationship. So I think when you go into it saying, like, hey, are you curious about talking about sex in general? Or you can say things like, hey, I heard this podcast the other day and they were talking about threesomes. What do you think about that? Mm-hmm. Right. And kind of like pose it as a question that you're sort of investigating together. Mm-hmm. You don't necessarily want to come in and be like, I'd like a threesome this weekend. Are you in? Right. Your partner might be like, what? I don't know how to process all of that.
Wow.
Yeah. Like, build it up a little bit. Yeah. And also show some vulnerability. Like, hey, I'm surprised that I was curious about that. I really love what we have together. And also, I'm really sort of surprised that there is this like curiosity that I don't know if it's interesting to me, but I think I'd love to talk about, like, could it be something interesting for us? Mm-hmm. Right. And make it about how it enhances your relationship instead of saying things like, I'm not happy in our sex life. I need to go do this over here. Mm-hmm. Like, that evokes a lot of threat and a lot of fear. If you're leaving the relationship, just leave the relationship. Don't threaten your partner with that, because that is manipulative and it amplifies discord and it puts your partner on the defensive right away. So if you say something like that to your partner, they're probably going to be really against it, mm-hmm. and feel like it is a wedge between you, because that's how you've levied it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, an ultimatum.
Yeah.
If this isn't figured out, I am leaving, mm-hmm. or like, I am going to outsource this elsewhere.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Ouch.
Yeah. Yeah.
No wonder your partner's not into it.
Uh-huh. Wow. That's a really great way for me. And I love the idea too of, you know, I think we've talked about this before too, where, you know, make sure you're choosing neutral times, yeah. and spaces around it. And kind of what you pose is, in your conversation, an openness for dialogue instead of absolutes.
Yeah.
And leaving space for maybes instead, mm-hmm. of absolutes, mm-hmm. hard yeses and nos.
Yeah.
Yeah, because sometimes these conversations aren't even figured out overnight. It's not figured out in one conversation.
No.
Yeah.
No. I've worked with couples who have taken 2 years to make decisions about changing things in their sex life. And not everyone takes that long to get there. And some people take longer, right? Like, there is not a correct recipe except the recipe that works for the partners involved. Mm-hmm. And I really appreciate you saying that. This is not a one and done conversation. Like, take your time. Talk about the pros and cons. Talk about what the fantasies that you have mean to you. Mm-hmm. What emotions do they allow you to access that you can't access in other ways? How do you think it would strengthen your relationship? Where's your relationship vulnerable if you do X, Y, Z? I think it's really important to slow down when you're introducing something that feels like a big deal.
Actually, I'd love to pick your brain on that a little bit more, as in, what are ways and kind of modalities you can see people expressing, or, you know, their sexual exploration, mm-hmm. and what are modalities that maybe we can begin to explore what was once maybe shameful into something that might be something that is actually pleasurable for you. Mm-hmm. And I think what I'm thinking of in the context is, like, does it mean that you want to act that out physically? Does it mean that maybe you can find an outlet somewhere else? Like, I'm curious about the modalities, mm-hmm. and like the options that you have around this exploration.
I love that question so much. Well, I'm going to start with a really tangible thing and then build on that. So there are lots of websites that you can go to that have like a yes, no, maybe list that you can download, including mine. I love a yes, no, maybe list because, first of all, partners can look at it and be like, I'm interested in that. Yes. Or maybe in these contexts and absolutely not. And then you can sort of compare notes and see where you already have alignment. And there may be a lot of surprises there that give you a foundation to start talking about, wow, I didn't know that we both were into bondage. How come we've never played with that? What does it mean to you? What do you like about that fantasy? Is it something that we want to do? And so it gives you a ready-made jumping off point, which I think is super helpful, especially when people don't know how to start a conversation or maybe don't know what they want, but know they're searching for something else, right? In terms of like sexual activities and exploration. So that can be a good place to start. Another thing that I really love are like intimate card games that give you a lot of questions. Again, we don't have these vocabularies because our society doesn't talk about sex in healthy, constructive ways a lot of the time. We don't know all the time how to start the conversation or how to ask deeper, more probing questions. So our good friend Natasha has Wonderlust, and I love her game, Mindful Intimacy. It's one of my favorite recommendations for couples. And it can be another great starting point to ask those kinds of questions with each other. But once you start identifying the things that you are both curious about, or even the things that maybe one partner is curious about that another partner does not feel is a decided no for them, then I think it's really important to start getting curious about, like, what is the fantasy? What does it bring up for you in your body? What does it bring up emotionally? What themes does it allow you to start playing with or work through, right? So for a lot of folks who like BDSM, for example, there can be a lot of curiosity about that. And there are a lot of myths about what BDSM is in the world. So for a lot of folks, it's about playing with power. And it can be something as simple as, tonight I'm taking charge of everything. Mm-hmm. You don't have to beat each other up or have like a whip collection or anything like that, unless that's your jam. But for a lot of folks, it's like, tonight I'm going to do this, not you.
Yeah.
And like, wow, like, what does that even feel like to feel that kind of power? So, you know, get curious about what is the exploration about with both of you? And can you think a little bit more dimensionally about your play? Because then if something is a no for a partner, like, let's say, for example, one partner says, I really want to walk you on a leash. Right? I want to feel that power. But the other partner's not feeling that. They're like, no,
yeah,
I can't. That's too humiliating. It doesn't work for me. I'm not here for that. But they might get really fixed on the idea of it being like a collar and a leash and being like a dog. So that's not really what their partner is like looking for. Their partner wants to feel powerful, right? So are there other ways that you can play with power that are amenable for you?
Yeah.
And when you start like backing into the what's available based on what's important to us, like that can be a really exciting place to start.
Mm-hmm. Right. So it's like stripping down the exact scenario that you have in your head and maybe getting more to the root of it, right? Where it's like, okay, well, I think that's what's actually so fun about sex and intimacy is like being playful and doing the strip away. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I've told you this before or if I've even told, maybe I talked about this on the podcast a while ago, but I remember years ago, there was a coworker that I was like crushing on and I was in a long-term relationship. And so I brought it to my relationship and, you know, after a while, and at first it was something where I was like, I don't know what this really means. But when I finally, you know, over time really stripped it away, I was like, actually, I think I'm just so intrigued by this individual's sexual expression, their confidence, the way that they walk through this world. Mm-hmm. And I want some of that. Mm-hmm. Like that, it was really like when I really stripped away from it, I was like, you know what? It's not that I want.
You don't want them.
I don't want them.
Yeah.
I don't. Exactly.
You want something they have. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I think though it can, though I have empathy for maybe the distress that sometimes it can cause on you or your relationships, I think that there can be also a way to shift your perception of it into being like, okay, can I look at this with a little bit more curiosity for what it actually means for me? And, you know, and sometimes it is a one-to-one scenario. Like, yeah, I do want to just, I want a threesome or whatever it may be.
I just want to put you on a leash.
Yeah, like, just want
to. Maybe the leash is important to your partner. Like, that's okay.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I think that's an interesting exercise to kind of experiment and play around with.
Totally.
I agree.
All right. My other one was...
Are we going to play Smash and Pass again?
I was like writing down rapid fires and I was like, should we do one? I mean, we could. I would have to get some names real fast going. Maybe we can do it on your show.
Oh, no.
That's amazing. Oh, maybe. But okay. So speaking of my story of sexual expression, I actually want to kind of end here because I think it's a really interesting topic that it's talked about, but I think a lot of times people are like, okay, wait, what is the difference between sexual expression and maybe my sexual identity and what versus things I want to explore? So how do you define sexual expression?
Oh, that's such a great question. When I think about sexual expression, I think about the ways that we embody and express and integrate vitality, pleasure, and playfulness into the way we move in the world. So sexual expression can be a part of, you know, to your point, observing this in someone else. There are some people whose sexuality is very integrated into who they are, and it shows, right? They walk into a room and they are in their bodies, right? They know how to stand in a way that communicates to themselves that they're like, oof, I'm feeling something. I'm feeling it. I love it. Oh,
zest for life, all things.
Yeah. And I think that sexual expression is really linked to our creativity and our vitality. So I think it breathes like a life into us. It's like a lifeblood. And if we feel really comfortable with that part of ourselves, then we show that to the world in how we move, in how we might flirt with people of all, you know, ages and genders. And I don't mean sexually flirt, but like, you know, just sort of
with
age.
Yeah.
Flirt with life, right? Say yes to things, have enthusiasm.
Or would you say that using sexual expression and exercising this in your everyday, can it be a shame buster? Can it be something? Can it be a tool?
I think so.
Okay.
I think so. I mean, we all have erotic capital. And I don't mean that in like a worthiness kind of way, but I mean, when we really embody that energy, right? And let it be something that lives in us and through us, it is really contagious energy. And people often want to be around those folks. And I don't mean like in a boundaryless, objectifying way, but you know, when you just have that sort of zhuzh in you, folks want to be around you and you want to be around other people. And that feels really exciting. You know, maybe that's a good word for it. There's like an excitement that's like, right, that's like simmering and people can pick up on it.
Yeah, I love it. What is your advice? Okay, so anybody's listening and they're like, all right, I love all these tools and these practices, but what is maybe if someone is struggling with their sexual shame and they're like, okay, I have some places to start. Do you have any kind of like words of wisdom to share with them on, you know, as they embark on decoding and deconstructing?
Yeah, I would say really, I don't mean to like oversimplify the process when I say this, and affirmations are not the end all be all, but I do think it's important when we're confronting shame to be really clear about practicing affirmations that reiterate to us our worthiness, our lovability, our wholeness, right? A lot of folks associate the word broken with themselves when they feel a lot of shame. So if you catch yourself saying, I'm broken, it's a great indicator that there's shame that lives somewhere in that experience. And none of us are broken, right? You may have been hurt, you may feel hurt, but you are a whole being. And that's part of the human experience to be hurt at some time, at some points in time. So I think when we take back our wholeness and really like practice reiterating to ourselves, I am good, I am whole, I am worthy. Like those things are important contrary actions to take when shame creeps up in new forms, because it does sometimes, right? You think you've got it addressed in one area and then all of a sudden you start feeling shame in some new way and you're like, I thought I dealt with that.
Yeah.
Right. Where did that come from? So really like try to practice being kind to yourself and affirming your wholeness and your goodness. And then I think it's also really important to maybe consider working with a sex therapist at some point if you're doing this work on your own or with friends and people that you love and trust, and there still seems to be some, you know, shame there. It's okay to bring that into a more professional space and have a sex therapist help you figure out how to better eradicate that shame and really find a home in yourself again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love it. Thank you, Kate. I love chatting with you.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much.
Such a treat having you on. So where can people connect with you and find you online?
Well, probably my website is the best, modernintimacy.com. I'm on Instagram and TikTok at Dr. Kate Balestrieri and on YouTube at Modern Intimacy. And they can listen to my podcast, Get Naked with Dr. Kate, and they can hear you on it.
Yes. Yay. All right, guys. Thank you so much for tuning in this week. Thank you, Kate, for being here. I love recording with you. There's always just like such good energy, and we always get into such exciting topics together. So I'm already excited for our next episode.
Me too. Thank you so much.
All right. Bye, everyone.
Thank you for listening to the Bedside Podcast. I hope you loved this episode as much as we did making it. If you have any feedback, questions, or suggestions for future episodes, or if you just want to chat, don't hesitate to reach out to us at The Bedside on Instagram and thebedside.co online. You can also find us at By The Bedside on TikTok. To stay updated on our latest episodes, be sure to subscribe to our podcast on your preferred platform. And if you found this episode valuable, I would so greatly appreciate if you could leave us a rating, a review, text it to a friend, share it to your Instagram stories. Let's get this message out there loud and clear. Until next time, thank you so much for tuning in, and I'll see you next week.